Please be aware. This episode of the Bigfoot Show contains explicit language and, what I'm told are, quote, adult themes, unquote. Proceed with caution. This synthesized voice intro is for you, Matthew White. Enjoy.
Do you guys play Candy Crush? You ever play Candy Crush?
I hate it.
What do you really think about it?
So do you hate it?
I hate it.
I hate it too. But now that I've started playing it, I can't stop playing this stupid thing. I think it's a complete ripoff. And every time I have to give them 99 cents, I feel like someone is ripping a tooth out of my head.
No, I refuse to give them any money whatsoever.
It's Bejeweled.
It's Bejeweled. I installed it on the wife and kids' iPads when we were away for the weekend, and I wanted some peace and quiet for a few hours. And it worked a treat, and I said I'd never play it, and then I sat down one day, started playing it, and it's like being on crack.
It is like some sort of, it's just challenging enough. I don't know. And then, you know, and every time I give them a dollar to go to the next level, I feel like a complete, like, whore. I feel horrible.
Yeah, I won't. I'm a cheapskate. I refuse point blank to give them any of my.
I do that too for the first, you know, little while.
What? No, I obviously have got more stamina. I will stick it out. I will not give them any money.
Why is it addictive and Bejeweled isn't?
Well, Bejeweled is addictive, but I'll tell you, I think that the Candy Crush trick is, again, it's just challenging enough that you feel like, you know, I'm gonna do one more time. I can get past it this time, right? Just one more time. And also, it's Facebook is just completely integrated into this thing. So you see where all your friends are, and you're like, so you know that they're two levels ahead of you, and you know that their score was higher than yours.
Is this going to be in the recording, Brian?
Yeah, I'm already recording.
Right, when did you start?
This is not an invite for anybody to send me fucking invites for Candy Crush. I will hunt you down and kill you if you do.
I didn't know you were on it. You must be so far ahead of where I am that I can't even find you.
78.
78? Hold on, let me see where I am, because I know I'm past you. Now I feel good about myself.
That's our show, guys.
I'm on level 86.
Oh.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, you've been paying your way out.
Not really. Anyway, it's the end of your show. End of your extravaganza hoo-ha show. We don't have our friend Sam today, unfortunately. So with me is Scott Harriet.
Hello. He sent me a Candy Crush invite, and I hunted him down.
And killed him. Unfortunately, he's dead. And of course, Paul. Paul, you weren't on the last couple of shows.
I haven't been on for months.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. Yes. Now.
I actually think the last time might have been July, August.
Whoa. Good Lord.
Holy moly.
Well, I need to do the official beginning of the show thing here. This is episode number 58, BFS 058, for those of you scoring at home. It is the 28th of December, 2013. This will be the last show of the year because there's only, you know, a few days left.
Right. Unless something really exciting happens tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Or the next day. But, yeah, that would be it. So we've got some I had asked at one point the big stories of the year, but there aren't that many, so I think this would be just sort of a standard show with maybe a bit of a reflective tone since it is the end of the year. Everyone said pretty much the same thing on the you know, big stories of the year stuff. Melba. It's all Melba.
Yeah, Jesus.
But how do you argue? I mean,
no, you're right. I mean, it's like, you know, Time's Man of the Year. It's not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
It's whoever had the most impact, and I think under those qualifications, she qualifies.
Yeah, I absolutely think she is. So if you're just listening to this to get the Bigfoot story of the year, you can go now because this is it. It's Melba Ketchum, unfortunately. Sorry, but that's what it is.
Well, the big story is nobody found one. Nobody proved they exist.
As far as we know.
Well, nobody proved they exist. I'm not going to say nobody found them, but no one has proven it yet again. So this will be one more year that we chalk up.
Maybe Fox will turn himself in. He'll just go to a media outlet somewhere and do an interview.
can you see the Bigfoot sitting at the news desk and somebody's tried to comb his hair so it's all kind of slicked back?
Cigarette dangling out of his house. Janice Coy.
And then at the bottom, they're doing like the subtitles.
Translation.
Yeah, subtitles.
No, you need a signer. You need
that
a
guy.
Signer.
Yeah, that guy from South Africa.
The guy from Mandela.
Right.
Yeah. Badminton asparagus. What? That's not what he said.
So yeah, when I asked back at the beginning of this month, Melba was listed. The Facebook Finding Bigfoot guys. We haven't heard from them in a long time, have we?
Oh God, thank God.
Are they still around even?
Yeah, I think they are. They're just, I don't know. What was your current estimation? Are they like willfully full of shit? Or are they kind of psychotically full of shit, or a combination of both? Meaning,
well, I would say they were not. I think they were genuine. It was kind of a borderline there for a while, whether it was performance art or if it was real. They appear to be gone on Facebook, which probably everybody already knew who's listening to this, but I'm just figuring it out. There is a Find Bigfoot group, but it's closed. I don't think that's them. Just Bigfoot is gone. They used to just have this sort of.
Yeah.
They were Bigfoot, and they apparently are fini.
They were due back at Bellevue. It was just so crazy. What made it maddening is how rational the guy sounded. If you know the tone and actually his vocabulary, but the actual content, it was so full of the pareidolia and or bullshit. It was just, we've had, 3 years ago, I think, or 4 years ago, those guys started. And it was just, obviously, I get riled up about it, but it's one of those things where people can truly sound like they're sane. You know, they're not just. It's clear they're not, or again, being willfully misleading.
Right. Their last post to Facebook was May 3rd, so they apparently are gone.
Gone. Yeah. Gone.
I'm just making my show notes here, trying to.
You know what you're. You know what you're tapping on the desk to. Right. Because you're looking.
Did you hear that?
Totally.
Okay, I'll try to type. I'll try to tap lighter.
I do have. I got Bose headphones for Christmas, so maybe I'm just a little more. But I can't hear myself speak, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. You have a cold. You sound like you have a cold.
It's a lot of wind blowing here in Southern California, so I got a little.
Oh, it's that.
The clamp. Yeah, it's horrible.
The Santa Anas.
The Santa Anas, exactly.
Right,
do you miss those in Minnesota?
No, because I don't like bleeding out of my nose profusely, so I don't.
Don't?
I don't miss them.
It's weird.
All right, Paul, what would you say, since you haven't been on the show for so long, what would be your story of the year? Was it that we didn't find one?
It's the...
Because that's boring. That's what you said last year.
I mean, the story is that absolutely nothing of interest or use has come to light this year, from my point of view.
I would say
there is nothing that has moved me away from my skepticism.
And one of the most disappointing things I would say would be what happened with Brian Sykes. That just turned into sort of a media event. And maybe the jury's still out on that. Maybe he's going to come back and his paper will be great. But
I still hope that there'll be a paper. And I'm sure there will be at some point. But he's not impressed me with his TV show.
No.
I think it was a pretty lame TV show, to be perfectly honest. And his hookup with the Bigfootology people, how aware of how that played out on the internet. Perhaps he's not aware of the sort of repercussions of that. I don't know. but he's not been impressive. The big story this year has been Melba Ketchum, which has been a complete non-story and has got worse and worse as the year's gone on. As the year has gone on, she's got lots of publicity.
Every time she opens her mouth,
but unless you're a terrorist organization, you can't use the expression any publicity is good publicity anymore.
She's a Squatch terrorist, is what she is. She's
Squatcherism. No, that doesn't work either. Usually we're good at this. We're a little off today. We can't coin
the
words.
Yeah, I know. It's the end of the year. I got phlegm in my throat.
It's you look at the stories that come up in the newspaper articles, you know, the likes of Huffington Post and this sort of thing this time of year, and they're all the same thing. You know, in fact, if anything, they are moving more towards that they're starting. The first line is, well, we all know Bigfoot is a hoax, but
right.
It seems that the newspapers, or what used to be newspapers, are now sort of online things, are being actually less enthusiastic about the subject. And I think the likes of Melba Ketchum are to blame, that it's ridiculing the subject. And what always bothers me, and it's bothered me for years, is that whenever you see a media article about the subject and it's about somebody like Melba Ketchum, and Melba Ketchum hasn't produced the goods, as it were, there's always this line that says, well, the Bigfoot believers were having all their hopes on this report. And
yeah.
Well, that's annoying, because the vast majority of so-called believers weren't pinning their hopes on it.
No.
But the media impression is that they were. Way that I think they work on the assumption that whenever a photo comes out or discussion of the PDF, it's always, well, Bigfoot believers would be right. Terribly upset if this was proven to be a hoax.
The media is shockingly bad at identifying everything. About identifying any sort of texture among communities, you know, like all Apple users are the same, all Republicans are the same, all people who believe in Bigfoot are the same. And it's easier, because that just makes that, you know, then they don't have to write as many words, and it's shorthand, and everyone can just sort of like nod their head and say, oh, sure, that's true. But I think you're right. And that's it seems to me that, you know, we've been on this for the past couple of years now. Bigfoot has been sort of rising in the public consciousness. Maybe we're getting to the curdling point where it's going to all go sour and then go back into the closet for a couple of years.
Can I just quick thing on the flip side of the coin with the negativity associated with Melba stuff is that at least the folks out there who are taking it somewhat seriously or open-minded to the phenomena are learning that people like Todd Disattel, PhD, respected scientist, Sykes, even though I agree with kind of his show, you know, it could have definitely been better, that the scientists are looking at it, if you look at the curve, are taking more general interest in the phenomena. So you can kind of glean, even though Melba's was a negative, well, we learned why it's a negative, because the chain of evidence and what she's talking about, she's not supplying the original samples. People are learning about the scientific method, and it's not as though I agree with that generalized thing you're talking about on newscast. Still, Bigfoot's, you know, great for joke fodder. But, you know, from this point, from, let's say, 5 years ago, definitely more general interest in it, coupled with what Brian was saying about I think we probably have peaked for a bit, and maybe it's due for a little hibernation, because it's simply burnout, you know, until there is a next step. If a body is found, or a DNA analysis comes through and says, whoa, this is an unknown primate, the chain of evidence is good. And, you know, time will tell.
Is that phone for me?
It's actually Melba Ketchum. I just listened to her and she went, garbity-garbity-garbity-garbity-do.
Paul?
I think perhaps the problem with the subject is that now that it has got media attention in terms of reality TV shows like Finding Bigfoot, it's falling into the same routine that other sort of American Idol style TV shows go into. So the subject, it has a sort of bell curve, it becomes popular, it's talked about everywhere, it becomes the Duck Dynasty of the moment, and then interest wanes, and within a couple of years, nobody's the slightest bit interested, and the TV schedules are dropping it because nobody's watching and they can't sell the advertising space. And I think give it another couple of years, Finding Bigfoot will undoubtedly be dropped because they can just put it on repeat.
So what happened with Monster Quest, right? I mean, you got enough episodes in the can, you just start milking.
You just repeat it forever.
Well, I mean, part of it, I guess, and there's so many things here that what you just said, Ty, I could segue into several things. But one thing that I would segue into right off of that is that new show, the Bigfoot Bounty Hunt, right? Starting on 2 weeks from now, January 10th, we'll have a brand new TV show about Bigfoot. Probably one of the, I mean, just from a conceptual standpoint,
it's not a show about Bigfoot, it's a show about idiots in the woods.
This exploitative show about the people looking for it. So yeah, you're right, they're not really about Bigfoot. I mean, they could be looking for anything, they could be out there looking for mushrooms, but it's really just about crazy people doing crazy things.
And they'll rehash things that have been already beyond. Yeah, because the odds, I mean, Paul's an established agnostic on this. Brian and I both pretty strong believers that these things exist. The odds of while they're doing that show, if you have a half a brain and analyze it, of any of those hoax actually having an encounter, the odds are low. I wouldn't say astronomically low, but I'd say they're low. So given the example of Finding Bigfoot and all its BS, I don't know. I'm always mystified by folks who can, and maybe I'm just too into the, I mean, even though I like to joke about it, when it comes to TV, I hate it when these shows have that non-comedic pretense of we're really scientifically going, and it's just so thin on that as far as the actual, because they're trying to make it so friggin' quote unquote entertaining.
Yeah.
And it's just not. And you know, it's just goofy.
And of course, we haven't seen it yet. But I have a couple friends who tried out for that show, a couple of which who got pretty far into the process and didn't make it. And now I think it's because they just weren't weird enough. You know, if you look at the people on the show, they wanted the most absolutely batshit crazy weirdos that they could possibly find. And I say that with all due respect, of course. So I think that this is going to be a bit of a train wreck. And it's not going to do anything to sort of help the – you know, I've said on the show before that I think Finding Bigfoot, as unimpressive as it is from an evidentiary standpoint, from a scientific standpoint, I think it's been a sort of a good ambassador, if you will, to the subject matter, because these are relatively serious guys, you know, sort of put Moneymaker off to the side there. He's kind of the clown of the show, but
the real clown,
which is saying a lot, because Bobo is he's cast to be the clown, even, you know, but anyway, So now, like I said, this is this purely exploitative, you know, it's sort of like a show about children beauty pageants, right? I mean, it's like the Honey Boo Boo of the Bigfoot phenomenon. Yeah. And I think it's actually going to start eating away. It's going to be like an acid on the community, because now people are just going to look stupid. They're just going to look really, really dumb when they go out there.
You know, imagine this scenario. Okay. The thing, of course, I like about the show is that they're non-kill, thank you. But of course, that could be one reason they could be doing that.
Their insurance company told them they can't have guns in the woods. That's all.
Yeah. Well, whatever. But let's say this happened. Let's say, as astronomical as these chances would be, they send these guys out, and these guys, you know, some of them do have actual some experience reading about it. Maybe they've done some researching whatnot.
Some of them, absolutely.
And let's say they're rooting around somewhere, and they friggin' find a bone. You know, like they find it. And they would have to pay the $10 million. Would that qualify?
Oh, yeah. No. Well, if they found like an actual – well, and
carcass,
again,
or
their panel of experts, including our friend Jeff Meldrum and Todd Disatel, which kind of blows them away. You know, they have to – and I think there's another one too. I think there's three of them. I don't remember the other one is.
Right.
They get to, you know, basically decide. I think that's how it works. But yeah, if you found something hard like that, something physical.
I didn't know Disatel was on. That's awesome.
Yes.
Though.
Well, I don't know that it is awesome.
Yeah.
You're just
mad because they didn't have the Texas Conservancy involved. Come on.
No, a lot of folks from our group, well, not a lot, a handful of folks from our group went out for the show and they just weren't weird enough. That's the problem. We just don't have enough freaks and geeks to fill out a show like
that. Maybe when Daryl walked into the audition with a bazooka, maybe that had something to do.
Daryl did not go out for the show. I don't think this is good for us. I mean, Disatel is a guy that you point to, say, hey, there's a serious scientist who's willing to give us a fair shake, and now he's showing up on this ridiculous television show. The lure of television.
Dude, that show hasn't even aired yet, and you're already calling it ridiculous. You got to get wait till it.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay,
come
fine.
On.
No. You're
right. I agree that
you're right.
That,
fine.
Yeah, you know.
I will wait until January 11th to call it ridiculous. You're absolutely right. I should be fair to the show. It's probably going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Come on. It could be. It might be. I don't know. I mean,
it could be. It might be, but it's not going to be.
But it hasn't happened yet, and you've already passed judgment. Now,
but I'll watch it. I have not passed judgment. I will watch it,
and then
if I am wrong,
ridiculous.
And then if I'm wrong, I'll come back and say, wow, what a great show that was. I can't believe that I gave it such a short shift.
Actually, wait a minute, but you bring up something really interesting. What would qualify it as being a good – let's say if we could see a show with these basic parameters, okay, what would qualify it as a great show? What would make a great show like that? And go ahead.
I think – you're asking me with what basic parameters? The basic parameters of this TV show?
Let me throw out why I would watch a show like this if the first episode had these qualities. First of all, minus the obvious, you know, slanted editing going into the commercial, building false drama,
right,
coming back. You know, if you just do just whatever happens out there, do it, and then coupled with like humor in the sense that it becomes a character study, but then they mix in actual science. Like if something happened, you know, what qualifies in this? And they mix actual scientific theory with non-exploitative editing. You could have I think you could have a fairly decent show.
Well, I think that, have you ever seen, Paul, what was the show that, Paul, are you there?
Yep.
Yeah.
The show the guy did, he rode the taxi cab around America for the BBC or Channel 4 maybe.
You're thinking of Stephen Fry in America.
Yes. So, you know, I think we've actually brought this up on the show before. Stephen Fry in America, I love Stephen Fry. He's fantastic. But this show is just great. And here's what I think is great about it and why I think it would make a good show like you're describing. Stephen Fry actually found everyone he met in the United States that ended up on that show. He found them interesting, right? He wanted to know their story. He wasn't there to exploit any of them. He wasn't there to make fun of any of them. He actually cared. And the problem with a lot of these shows, even Finding Bigfoot, if you sort of know the backstory and the people that have been on that show, the producers don't give a rat's ass either about the people on the show or what they're trying to do. All they care about is producing a show that gets people to watch it. But when
you clearly didn't read the book that Stephen Fry wrote accompanying that TV series.
When he's on the show, he shows them respect. He's interested in what they say. He doesn't appear to be making fun of them. Now, what he actually thought, I mean, I can't say. But when he's on the show, he does not appear to be exploiting any of these folks. Whether or not he like actually liked them is neither here nor there. He didn't. He was interested in their stories and wanted to show their stories. And so, if you had a show like that where they were, you know, because the people in the field, some of them are kind of interesting from a weird way. Anyway.
Well, and you want something. I mean, and again, speaking somewhat from experience with the films I do about backpackers and stuff. I mean, I definitely like to have fun with some of them, but I think a key is that the show itself, or like when I do my films, I have to have fun with myself too. I have to poke fun at myself. Is that we're all just humans. We all have our foibles. If it's a full out, like, Daily Show type of thing, then I agree. It doesn't really meet the needs of any type of scientific knowledge pertaining to the topic, like a lot of things, it requires balance. Right. And so, are you bringing something new to the table that hasn't already either been discussed on Finding Bigfoot or the countless other shows? Then it just, you know, it's just like Paul was alluding to. Once an idea gets set, an American Idol, it's just amazing how it spawns into all these offshoots that are so ridiculously boring because it's just basically the same thing.
Yeah. Well, all these guys. I mean, you can't blame them. This is. this is their job, right? I mean, this is why Phil Robertson, no matter how you feel about him, this is why he's back on Duck Dynasty, because at the end of the day, it's a ridiculously popular show. It makes a ton of money for everyone involved. There's no way in hell they're going to stop making that show. And that's the way it is with all this Bigfoot stuff. You know, finding
Bigfoot, of course, an awful lot more people are going to watch it when it starts again in the new season.
So, you know, Finding Bigfoot's the same way. Very popular program. They're all just going to keep milking it until the cow runs dry.
Right. I would say, you know, it's up to each individual to do, and I would agree it's fine, but as long as you're making some kind of effort to bring your own unique spin to it. Otherwise, then you're, I mean.
No, I agree with you from a how do you live with yourself standpoint, but these guys, they don't care about that. They're just trying to figure out a way to, you know, capitalize and milk money out of it. So they don't.
Yeah, all you've got to do is, much like, you know, American Idol, is change the format a little bit, rename it, do another show. I mean, this is what these so-called talent shows have been doing for years now. Simon Cowell's made a living out of doing, you know, Pop Idol, but, then American Idol.
But then, do you think he's in it for the money? Do you think Simon Cowell's in it for the money?
No, he's definitely in it for the art.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Let's move on. Sort of, we can segue slightly. A couple of weeks ago, I noticed that Matt Moneymaker posted to Twitter. He posted the, you know, face of Matilda, the very sleepy Sasquatch, on her Twitter, and he said, this is a quote from his tweet that is from the date on this, appears to be, I can't find it because I suck. He said, here's a real clip of a real Bigfoot. I can easily debunk anyone who tries to claim it is fake, especially Bill Munns. So anybody who thinks that the sleepy Matilda Bigfoot is a Wookiee because it looks like a Wookiee, Matt Moneymaker is ready to debunk you.
You know, I think Matt maybe has, you know, he's always been kind of half over the edge, you know, half kind of full of shit and half self-delusional. He's always kind of been that way.
Yeah.
But it really may be tilting toward that delusional. I mean, because that is such, you know, first of all, the canines, how many people have ever reported a Sasquatch that has canines like that? It's nearly an exact match to the Chewbacca.
It is.
Everything. Right. So, yeah. So
I don't even know where to start with it. Right.
I know. It's like, he's always had that penchant. And it's not like everything that comes out of Matt's mouth is total horseshit. I mean, the guy has moments of lucidness when I've talked to him in the past, but it's just almost like he gets so revved up and just starts, and he's always been one of these, the end justifies the means type of guys. Well, it doesn't matter how many, whatever, as long as our goal is met, one of those dudes. But when you think that way long enough, I think it becomes hard to distinguish between your own bullshit and objective reality. And he just seems like in the last 2 years, I don't know, maybe with all the increasing fame or all whatever, it's just like it's exactly like I said, where do you start? It's like, what? It's crazy.
No, let's be fair about this.
Why? Why should we start now being fair?
Not everything Matt Moneymaker says or writes is complete garbage. I'm just looking at his Twitter feed now. There are some perfectly valid full stops and commas. I don't have a problem with any of those.
Actually, there's another tweet that he did back on December 8th that I'll get to when we're done talking about this from Matt. Yeah, I think what Matt needs to work on is what a lot of people, to be perfectly fair, both in and out of this field, it's just a human problem. He needs to be okay with being wrong every once in a while.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He probably invested quite a bit, and I don't mean invested from a money standpoint, but possibly he put a lot of resources into this. I don't know for a fact what he did, but right. You know, this whole Matilda video thing, he probably has a lot of investment, quote unquote, into this story and everything around it, and when it comes out to be junk, instead of saying like, wow, that looks like junk, you know, he's basically going to carry it to his grave. The same with the stupid you know, Jacob's bear photos, where it's like, yeah, for the rest of time Matilda is a Bigfoot, and you know, and what's going to happen, let's just pretend we're at some point in the future and yay, Bigfoot has been proven to be real and it doesn't look like a Wookiee, you know what, he probably still will say that it was real.
That's a really good point.
Couldn't he just avoid saying things that were wrong by not talking?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I don't think he can. I mean, that's the problem. I think that
he's a spokesperson for finding Bigfoot in the BFRO. I have to make some kind of definitive statement.
That's it. He likes to be the guy to make the statements. And
you know, because they still are the only scientific
Only one that I'm aware of. I don't know of anybody else to being.
It says it right there on the website.
Well, it is. It's on the internet, so it must be true. No, the other. Go ahead, Paul. You're going to say something else?
Tweet, 12th of December. Chewbacca was designed to look like a primate face. The teeth pattern of a Chewbacca. I'll say that again. The teeth pattern of a Chewbacca is similar to many primates, including chimpanzees. Now, it's fairly well documented that Lucas patterned the Chewbacca or the Wookiees in general on his dog.
Correct.
That's well known. It's been documented for years.
Well, he said it too. So
yes,
his dogs are 8 feet tall and walk on two legs.
He had a big furry dog, and so he said that the Wookiee was.
My other favorite from yesterday, in fact, earlier today, there were two zones in Mount Everest region, Nepal. Well, I actually thought half of Mount Everest was in China.
Well, whatever.
Come on, get him sleeping. Stop it.
But if you're gonna be the guy that tweets fact and you're gonna post and everything you say is factual because I say it, why can't he be accurate?
Matt Moneymaker,
do a bit of research and stop looking like a prat.
His story is often wrong but never in doubt. I mean, that's pretty much the slogan for Matt Moneymaker.
And coupled with what Brian had said earlier and also Paul, as far as what Matt, for some reason, the way he was raised, genetically structured, whatever, he just doesn't seem to care.
He was patterned after a Wookiee.
Yeah, after he's when he's wrong, like you're saying, it's like he's admitted, but it just bounces off him. I mean,
right. No, he just pushes forward. That's his thing. Yeah. He just pushes forward. You know, next. You know, he just pushes forward.
Yeah. And so, what do you think goes on? Is it his head? Like, well, I can always apologize later. It doesn't matter if it gets more people involved. That's also he's always struck me as that type of guy. Just throw enough shit on the wall.
I think if it elevates his visibility, that's what really matters.
But the way he acts is no different to these sort of idiots that keeps looking at photographs with orbs in them and saying, "Oh, these are the spirits of dead people and dogs." Yeah. I know this to be true. It's a fact.
No, they're not dogs. I know for a fact that they're goldfish spirits. I mean, come on, Paul, they're floating around.
It's the same mentality. I don't understand it, but he's not alone in it.
There's not at all in these
sort of fields that are like this. I mean, it's just something defective.
And there's a fine line because I've said it on the internet. I've say this. As far as I'm concerned, I know for a fact that Bigfoot are actual living animals. I know for a fact, but that doesn't mean that I'm not willing to accept other information and to change my theory about other things. I don't think anyone can prove to me that they're not real because I've seen them. So how can you do that? But at this point,
wait a minute. Let me interject. But I thought you said, I'm just because I love you as a friend.
No, I know what you're going
to
say. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I always go back to what you originally said you saw.
Yeah.
And that you saw two, they weren't upright. You said there were two black objects. And then you had other people there who said, but you didn't see that.
So as I've said on this show and when I've been asked this on the internet, let's say you went on a safari and you were on top of one of those safari vehicles with four of your friends and you saw two sort of like grass colored blurs charging through the underbrush from like basically one set of trees to another, right? But three of your friends said, "Oh my God, did you see those lions? That one, his mane was so big and I could see his tail and his teeth were flashing or whatever." Would you go home and say, "Well, I saw two blurry things. I can't tell you what they were." Or would you go home and say, "I saw a couple of lions. I didn't have a good look at them, but they were lions."
I would say the first because I didn't see them.
Having been in that situation this year, I went home and said, somebody said it was a leopard. I saw something blurry. No idea what it was.
Well, my friend saw lions, so I saw lions.
But, dude, listen to what you're saying. I know.
Wait. Yeah. I can hear what I'm saying. I can hear it. I've said it before.
But you're not the other person. You're not whoever was there. Well, you're not them.
I don't really care what the other person thinks, right? So what I'm saying is, in my opinion, based on not just that event, but everything that happened around it before and since, but that event is pretty important to me.
Yeah, I know.
Let me finish what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay.
It's enough for me, you know? Now, remember, what happened was two of my friends saw them walking before they ran up the hill. I saw them running up the hill. Another one of my friends saw one walking on the hill after it ran up. We had a lot of interesting activity happening before and since. It would be silly for me to say, I mean, I just can't imagine that I was going to say, well, I don't know what it was. These people that I know and trust and have spent lots of time with, and they said they saw Bigfoot, and some of them got a much better view of it. But I'm going to say that what I saw was fuzzy brown things. I mean, what's the point of that? They were Bigfoot. I mean, that's what they saw. That's what I saw. I don't understand why I need to sit here and like split hairs. I'm not trying to prove it to anybody. For me, it's enough, which is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's not enough. You know, Paul says that he's skeptical and no, he hasn't heard anything. I don't take that personally. Whatever. I don't care. Matt Moneymaker would be up in his grill, you know, basically pointing his little finger at his virtual chest, telling him, like, these are the reasons why Bigfoot. I don't care what Paul thinks. I know what I think. I know what I saw and I know what I've experienced. And that's good enough for me. And that's all there is to it. You know, I could say what you want me to say.
No, I don't want, I just, but I'm, it I wouldn't, want you to say anything. It wouldn't be enough. It's just what is, I don't doubt you, but what I'm saying, the danger, the potential danger, not with you or anybody else in this scenario, is that your perceptive abilities are not the same as somebody. If you equate them, look,
What answer are we trying to get at here? Do I think that I have proven that Bigfoot are real and everyone should accept that for an absolute fact? No, I don't. Do I think that Bigfoot are real and I have established for enough of a degree of certainty that they are? Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's all we're talking about. Yeah. So I don't believe that anyone should take anything that I've experienced or said or on this podcast or anywhere else and say, well, because of the things Brian said, I think Bigfoot are real. No, I don't think that's true. But it's enough for me. And I can't control anybody else.
Can't.
Somebody's typing. You know, somebody's typing with much anger right now. I don't know.
That's my fault.
He's right. So anyway, Brian has gone over the edge. That's what he's saying.
To Moneymaker. His problem is that as soon as something comes out of his mouth, it's written in stone. And so, and maybe I'm wrong, and I would love for someone to point out to me where I am wrong. But has Matt Moneymaker ever once in his whole life around this subject matter ever said that he was wrong about something?
No. That is a good point. He's one of those, and there are just personality types that are like that. That they feel, you know what it is. They're so afraid of. They think it's then. If I admit I'm wrong, it's like it's a sign of weakness. No, it's a sign of honesty.
Right.
If you're faced with the evidence that, you know, what I believed or saw before or heard or whatever wasn't the case, and then. Yeah, you have. That's what science is. It's just like, you know, you go forward with theories. Oh, wait a minute. There's something else that makes better sense.
It's science. It's also just intellectual honesty, right? It shows a pliability of your intellect that you can say, well, I thought one thing was true, and it turned out I was wrong about that, and that's all there is to it.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, the thing, too, is that it's almost weird when someone is in that frame of mind, it's almost like if I don't say anything, no one else. They almost seem blind to the fact that other people are seeing what they can't or they're not fessing to.
Yeah,
it's like the guy. It's like to say that, you know, the guy who's the alcoholic is always the last to know. Everybody else knows the problem or whatever the guy's problem is. He's the last to know because he or she is having a hard time facing it. But you're exactly right, man. It's we all in our whole lives have made mistakes. You know, I mean, either intentionally or just inadvertently, whatever. Right. But and we just
keep... Well, I can't think of one mistake that Matt Moneymaker made because he deleted it after he made it. back on the 8th of December on Twitter, during the you know, they do live tweeting. He and Renee and Cliff, Bobo usually not so much. He tweets a little bit, but the three of them are pretty good live tweeters of their shows. And the narrator, and so Matt, this is his tweet from December 8th, 2013, 11:02 p.m. Narrator says, "We got a howl, quote, we spent years waiting for, unquote, ?" What a bunch of bullshit, !! This production company is so full of shit, !! Wow, Matt, I mean, come on, these guys are, they're putting meat through the handle, you know, bars of the cage, and you're like chewing on them. Like, I can't believe. So anyway, that was deleted. It got retweeted a couple of times, but it eventually was deleted.
Oh, well, no, I like that. I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, me too. That's how he felt. He was being honest at that moment. Hold on, I'm going to get this phone out of the room. Hold on.
But clearly he feels that he made a mistake tweeting that, which is probably true. That was probably a mistake, calling basically the guys who pay your paycheck, basically saying they're full of shit.
Yeah, I mean, the alternative is, and I've seen this with people in paranormal fields, where they do see the light, they become uber skeptics. The worst possible skeptics. They go, they're like reformed smokers.
Oh yeah,
and so I'd rather he stayed the way he was, because he's lovable in a weird way.
If you hang out with the quote unquote skeptics, you know that you'll find those guys. Well, I used to think this was real, and then as soon as they say that, he's like, okay, great, you know, because I used to think this was real, and now, and you're right, they are, as a
card carrying skeptic. Some of them are terrible. They are just so closed minded.
Yeah. Skeptics.
Skeptics as opposed to skeptics.
They're denialists. Yeah,
I was going to say, I have a friend, exactly what you guys are talking about, was so into, this is probably 20 years ago, alien abduction stuff. And it was I was interested reading about like a Stryber's book and other thing. And possible, who knows? And he was so into it. And then, man, I hadn't talked to him in a little while. Went back, and exactly the way Paula described it, he had just gone to this. He was, it was like emotionally, I think it was so hard for him. He just went to that extreme. He couldn't have the balance anymore. He felt so scared to have the open-mindedness. And it's, I think the thing is, anybody listening to this, and we had talked about this before, it's okay not to know. It's okay. You don't have to go down on one side or the other.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, investigate it, listen to opinions, look at the evidence, and you come to your own opinion or non-opinion, and that's all good, too.
I think that people are afraid of saying they don't know something. I also think that when one certainty – they have certainty in one area, as I said, I'm as certain as I can be that these things are real. And so therefore – that means that I have to be certain about a much. I mean, there's very little that I'm certain about. I mean, I'm certain about practically nothing. I'm the first one to say I don't know anything about these animals, really, except the stuff that we've observed and the things that we've. But even that, I don't know anything that we've observed.
Right.
It's just our assumptions, because there's no way to know.
It's a case by case thing. That's the thing. Exactly what you said. I've seen that in this field, especially. Well, once something is affirmed in an individual, they feel. Then they seem to give the benefit of the doubt to every incident that comes along, which is exactly anti-scientific. It's like, you know, you don't have to be like hardcore scientific, or you don't have to be that. How about just listen? And then, you know, you have your own opinion about based on, let's say, the person telling the story. If you know for a fact this person has BS'd 10 times before, let's using Biscardi as an example, you know, it makes sense that if he comes forward with a story, you're going to be a hell of a lot less likely to believe him than, let's say, someone like how do you pronounce him? Is it John Mizaninski?
Mizaninski?
Yeah,
Mayaninski.
Which is also offering you a segue there.
Segue, thank you. I was looking for the off ramp, and there it was. I wasn't going to go to John next, but we'll go there anyway.
I'm sorry.
It's good. I wanted to get to it. We posted to our page a couple of days ago that John Mayaninski, who. It says on this this is on the BigfootBuzz.net, a website that says it's Bigfoot for grown-ups, in case you're wondering, that he's Dr. John Mayaninski. I didn't know he was a doctor. That may be true. I'm surprised to see that. I didn't know that was true. Because, you know, he doesn't put it in – anyway. He's a guy that's been out in the woods for 41 years. I mean, he's a biologist, right? So he's found some interesting – you know, examples of ungulates with their necks broken in a very particular way, and he's interpreted that to be a sign of basically, you know, Sasquatch hunting technique. It's a fascinating article.
It's one of the best articles I've written. I actually ghostwrote it for him.
Did you write it for him? Wow,
yeah,
that was good of you.
Mayaninski is my middle name. It's I think. And I like how he does. He actually, at the end, he sums up and says, look, this is, you know, it's theory, but it's pretty interesting. And plus, I don't know, did we ever talk about his story that got him into this?
Oh, I'm sure we have. But yeah,
saw you was at that conference. Oh, my God. That's a great, crazy story.
Yeah, it's a great story. If you guys don't know, I'll have to find that for you guys. The John Mayanzinski story. I'm sure that's on the internet somewhere. But basically, yeah, it's a great story.
Yeah, great story.
Did you read the article, Paul?
No, I didn't.
Oh, great.
In essence, he said he found samples of these ungulates that their necks had been broken very aggressively at the C1/C2 joint. And there was no evidence in these kills of bear activity around it. And there had been, there had been sightings, Sasquatch reported sightings in the vicinity of several of these encounters. So
also,
the way
that the skin had been removed from the animals was also very distinctive and didn't show any signs of claws or teeth or knife or anything like that. And then what was interesting is in doing his research, he dug up an account from, I'm trying to scroll down to it right now, the 1890s, where two ranchers near the Snowy Range, I don't know where that is, but near the town of Centennial, I believe in Wyoming, and they claim to have seen two Sasquatch-like figures, hairy man-like figures, run out of a forest and basically jump on an elk and pull its head back in just the same way he's found and had reported to him. He's investigated ungulates being killed in this exact same way. So it's an interesting correlation between an account, this is from the 1890s, and what he's seen with his own eyes and investigated in the field. It's a fascinating article.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm trying to remember in the article, I don't think he mentions it, but I would like to know what the similarities were in the kills of what was taken from the bodies. I don't think he gets into that.
I don't think he gets into that either. Because I was looking for that as well. I mean, what did they eat? What did they leave behind?
It's hard to believe that, you know, if squatches are out there, that they're, you know, killing them for shits and giggles.
It could be. Maybe they're just in it for the sport.
No, they're forest people.
They're kind forest people. They're bored. This is it. They're youngsters. Like, hey, I bet I could take down or kill an elk faster than you could.
Who was the one – somebody was floating the theory years back. Something about that – was it the liver? Some people think that –
Well, the liver, it's got a lot of protein, nutrients, whatever. Yeah. Iron, a lot of iron in there.
And nothing else seemed to be touched on these animals. And there was no evidence of clawing or – I don't know. I'd like to see more detail and photos of that stuff too.
Anyway, totally.
We've seen these sort of stories for many years of you know, something – taking the liver. It makes no sense whatsoever for a predatory animal that is hunting for food to take one piece of a carcass. It takes a lot of effort to catch something. It's going to take more than that. It's going to eat. We've seen instances, certainly in the UK, of animals, horses in particular, that have been mutilated and parts of the body have been taken. And we don't have any predatory animals here, apart from foxes, which aren't going to take down a horse. And in most cases, they've turned out to be some weird witch coven, occultist sex group. We've had instances of wallabies being slashed and parts taken over the years. I don't see anything in this that would lead me to believe that it's a wild animal that's hunting it down and hunting the deer down and using it for food.
What if it's an alcoholic Sasquatch?
What do you mean, taking the livers out of these animals? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, I want to know how many.
If it's
foxes.
A different type of animal we don't know about, maybe it would. I mean, if it's a primate, maybe they would. I don't know. I mean, I'm saying.
I don't know either.
I don't either. Yeah. See, Paul, we don't know. It's okay if we don't know.
I don't know. And I think this can be tested. I think we can devise a test for this. How many foxes would it take to pull down a horse?
Yeah, I knew that's what you were laughing at. You had that image in your head.
Well, it's like that thing, you know, would you rather face one 200-pound duck or 201-pound ducks, right? Or whatever, or horses or whatever. You know, there's that story. You know, would you rather face 200 foxes or one horse-sized fox? And how many of these little foxes would it take to pull a horse down? And I mean, because maybe they just need to work together.
I think we need to set up an experiment.
I'm saying we could totally do this. You'd have to train them from a very young age to
I think
to hunt.
You can do it on computer simulation. You know, we love animals. Come on, we don't have to kill them to do this. I think it's 28. 28 average size foxes, average size horses, because a combination of weight and their wiliness.
How big is a fox? I mean, how much is a fox weigh?
You know, a fox weighs about probably, what, 20 pounds, I'm guessing, average
no,
fox?
Oh, not that big.
Really? I've seen them in the wild, dude, in the Sierra.
Paul, what do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably about the right weight.
I'm
going for 27.
So,
how much?
Are you undercutting me?
What do you $1.
One fox. It's 40 feet long, but it's a
I'm
fox.
I'm asking the internet how much a fox weighs.
Jesus. This is what our show has come to.
Well, this is important. People are.
It is.
A red fox weighs from 6.5 to 24 pounds, so you were on the high side.
Wait a minute. A red fox weighed at least 220 when he died. I know that for
not,
a fact.
Not red fox.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A red fox.
Gotcha.
A red fox, right.
Right.
So I'm going to, you know, if the average is about 15 pounds, I think you need a lot of. I mean, how much is a horse weigh, Paul? That's a really serious.
Jeez.
That's a seriously big.
Average horse? Maybe a half a ton?
I've got no idea. You're talking about 500 to 700 kilos.
You've owned horse. First of all, you got to speak in English. You got to speak in English. Kilos don't mean anything. That's like Monopoly money. I don't
stone.
Know. I don't know what a kilo is.
Or a stone. What's that bullshit?
Seriously. How many stones are you now, Paul? I mean, you.
I guess, how much is a stone? 14 pounds?
14 pounds.
14 pounds.
Oh,
excellent.
Wow, that's total guess.
Very, Jesus. Very helpful, the English. Once again.
500 kilos is 1,100 pounds.
All right, so you're going to need, I bet you need 100 foxes, minimal.
I don't know.
Yeah.
To pull down a horse. Okay, moving on.
It depends if you start with the legs.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
And then, but they got. I think you got to get up on top because they're going to kick the foxes. They got to jump up onto the back of this thing and just sort of rip it to pieces from the top down. I think you got to. Yeah. I think you got to go top down. I think you go bottom up.
And they've got to do it. They've got to do it without any signs of trauma. So they've got to break the neck.
Right. Well, no. I'm not even talking about that. I just want to know how many foxes it'll take to kill a horse. I think that's.
But if you throw into the scenario a chimp on the back of a tiger with a laser, how many more do you have to?
Oh,
add?
One tiger could take down a horse.
No, I mean they come to the rescue.
Oh,
the
yeah. they're on the horse's side.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
friends.
Then you need like 1,000 foxes.
Yeah,
at that point,
yeah.
you just need numbers. Unbelievable. You know, I know some.
I think there's a certain Eric S. Brown out there thinking of his new novel.
No, dude, wait a minute. Seriously, how the hell does that guy write as quick as he? That there's something. I've never read any of his stuff. You've read them, I guess, and thought they're good. I'm not into that.
He has a basement with an infinite number of Bigfoot and typewriters.
Stephen King does it the same way. I think he writes on the toilet, right? He's writing all the time.
Every like 2 weeks. Hey, right. I just finished my news. 500-pound Bigfoot gets a nuclear warhead. It's available. What the hell?
He's clearly got a typewriter in the bathroom.
Eric, will you write us a letter? Seriously, tell us your method. How many pages a day you write? Because it is staggering. How many books this guy writes in the amount of time. I mean, it's like, I want to know if he has a staff. I want to know if there's foxes involved, chimps on tigers with lasers.
And in the meantime, he's ghostwriting all these ones that Amazon have just pulled.
Oh, well, that's – thank
nice
you for
segue.
The segue. I was going to say we need to go to something a bit more serious, and let's talk about the Bigfoot porn being pulled off of Amazon. I think this is a horrible, shocking development.
Horrible.
But apparently, according to our friends who are not our friends at Business Insider, Amazon is pulling down not just the Bigfoot porn, but all kinds of fantasy porn, you know, sex with dinosaurs, which apparently is a thing. This woman, it says here, Virginia Wade, I'm quoting from this IO9 blog article. Virginia Wade, one of the authors interviewed for the piece, said that during a good month, her 12,000 word Come for Bigfoot could net $30,000.
Wow. That's a lot of jizz.
She's netting $30,000 writing about Bigfoot sex. I think this is.
What was the name of that book again?
Come for Bigfoot.
Come with that C-U-M.
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Oh, man. I'm hard as a rock right now. I don't know about you guys, but jeez. Yeah.
Well, I could understand them being pulled from Amazon UK because we do have some very stringent Obscene Publications Act legislation. And in fact, we professionally, we've been looking at a number of well-known publications to see whether they fall within that act or not.
Yeah, but over here we have freedom. We have the First Amendment.
But you can publish whatever you want in the States.
Right, yeah.
But I could see them removing them from Amazon UK, but they've been available here for ages. But it's a tricky situation
who's,
here now.
Who's being hurt by this? This is the thing, you know. If you listen to
nobody's
being hurt by this.
You're assuming that people write laws and make decisions like this based on the assumption that they're protecting people.
Well, apparently the point of this story, and you're right, that's not why people write laws. But apparently a lot of this has to do with basically people being upset that Amazon sells books that depict things like bestiality, and so they're sort of like pushing the envelope out to say, well, you know, bestiality, Bigfoot, dinosaurs, centaurs, you know. So
I'm upset that Amazon publishes and sells CDs with Simon Cowell's name on them.
Yeah,
nobody protects me from that.
Yeah. I got nothing else to say. I just think that it's unfortunate, and of course I'm not reading it myself. It doesn't do anything for me, but I feel bad for people, cuz there are some people, like, for instance, Dan,
you have the audiobook.
No,
right?
Dan, I do. Yeah, well, I do a lot of commuting. Dan Savage.
Dan Savage has said,
like, for instance, people who have a thing about, like, centaurs, how else are they going to be able to they're never going to have sex with a centaur. So if you didn't have this kind of porn, it just seems like these people, I feel bad for them now. I think they're being singled out.
One day that guy could go psychotic, get a gun, force someone to put a centaur outfit on, and then rape them. So really, they're really doing a good thing.
Do you know what a centaur is? I mean, I don't know how that would work.
I don't either.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. Part of me says, well, let people publish what they like.
Yes.
But when you search on Amazon Kindle in particular, there's an awful lot of rubbish on there. It's like buying something from Google Play or one of the other Android app stores, as opposed to iTunes. There's a lot of rubbish. And I wouldn't mind a little bit of curation going on the Amazon Kindle store.
In a lot of ways, you know, the way that this sort of thing is handled is there's a special place for it. You know, you don't walk into any old mall and find pornography. You have to go look for it specifically. And anyway, I feel bad for the Bigfoot fetishists out there who are being.
How many Bigfoot fetishists do you think there are?
She's making $30,000 a month.
Oh.
So there's a couple.
What if she's buying all her own books? You know, I mean,
I never went to business school, but that business plan seems a little flawed, to buy your own stuff. And I think
that's people picking up other people's Kindles in the office and buying books for them. That's exactly what's going on.
Okay, well.
You've picked up somebody's Kindle, they've left it on their desk, they've gone out to lunch.
Well, you know,
and there's half a dozen Come for Bigfoot books on their Kindle.
And I wonder what percentage, seriously, would be bought as a gag gift. I bet maybe 20%.
Not $30,000 a month.
Not on Kindle. If they were printed, I could get it. But
right.
You don't
buy
digital Kindle books as gifts.
No, you don't.
And I don't believe the $30,000 figure.
It's mind-boggling.
If that's right, I'm hanging up now, and I'm going to start typing.
you were typing earlier. We're on to you, dude.
With all of your understanding of how, you know, this world of Bigfoot works, you could probably do something very, very accurate. I think it was Sam who, maybe he said this in a private message to me, but he's pretty sure that Lauren Coleman is doing this right now.
And no longer private message.
So, well, you know, if Sam had been here, he could have said, no, don't say that. So what he
that
gets.
Was a funny line, though. Yeah.
What he gets.
Yeah, Lauren does seem to be a little obsessed with the – I mean, it is an interesting topic. He's right in the sense that it's something that's not talked about. But, dude, it's like we don't even have verification that they exist. So to focus on that, which until there are field observers – And hopefully not joiner inners, you know.
Henner,
it's all so pure speculation.
Henner Fehrenbach likes to talk about that too.
You
take him to a conference, and by the end of his talk, he'll get down to the, you know, the Sasquatch displaying for the woman who is sunbathing topless or something. It's great fun. It's good fun.
Yeah,
Renee liked it.
I do have a a story I could relate, but I can't do it in this recording.
That's what the after party's for.
I can't. I'd love to, but I can't.
Okay, enough about Bigfoot porn.
But from a legal point of view,
I wonder what Renee did.
we had a person ask that you do the entire show as Renee.
That's a bunch of bullshit. I would never do the. Let me tell you about the people who talk about Sasquatch and the sex. They got cocks like we do. Suddenly I'm turning into one of those Chicago Bear guys from the SNL skit. Anyway, the thing is, I don't give a rat's ass what the Sasquatch is sticking his bahoho in, as long as they don't hurt us. Now I'm suddenly from New York. I can't even talk like him anymore.
You sound like an old Jewish man.
It sounds more like Ruth Westheimer.
Seriously, you got like a whole Yiddish thing going on all of a sudden.
I can still say that's a bunch of bullshit.
But that's good.
In person, I heard him say that at least 12 times. It was awesome. When Kranz was talking, he was in the back row. He'd like have his arms folded and he'd like whisper over toward me. He goes, "That's a bunch of bullshit." I was there. I have the stick. It's at least 6 inches long. Would you like some candy? No, I don't. He's a weird dude. But he was a character.
In our last show, we asked someone to show us to find thermal footage of a gorilla.
Oh, yeah.
And Mark Johnson, who's a listener, did it. And we posted it to our Facebook page back on the 7th. Thermal footage of a gorilla. It's great. It's good stuff.
Yeah. And then Paul pointed out, and I think it's a good point, even though I'm still kind of in love with that Mike Green footage.
Is that the one from which one? The candy bar footage?
The candy bar.
I'm getting my green footage confused.
This is what I'd like to see, because first of all, you know who did the analysis in the show is friggin' Moneymaker and those guys.
Yeah.
So and I don't trust anything Matt Moneymaker says. So what I would love to see is just detailed an experimentation, same camera, different settings, same, you know, and show me like the gradations of what a guy wearing – I know there's been Bart Catino has done experiments with this. But
no, that was
specific.
That wasn't Bart. Oh, it was Cliff. Cliff did that.
Cliff, I'm sorry. Yeah. They look so similar. Not at all. But just showing levels of where the settings are on the specific camera. Do it during the same type of day so you can get a better view or a better idea that if you have footage that comes forward – and you know that what the settings were, you can verify those settings. Is it something, was it something bipedal that didn't have clothes on?
Well, that was, we did a show. Maybe you weren't on it. Who did we have on? We had,
was it Dranguinness?
Yeah, we had Bill Dranguinness on. and he, I mean, those are a lot of his same issues. He said that the thermal was set incorrectly so that everything looked really, really hot. The trees were glowing, in fact. But yeah, a lot of the same issues. It's one of those things that just stays in the really super interesting column. But yeah, everything you're saying is basically, I mean, kind of from my recollection, what he was talking about.
Yeah. I guess it's – and how do you verify – well, I guess there's certain cameras now that probably have it where you can verify what the setting was. Like maybe it's stamped into the video imagery. So you could say, look, it was at this and it was – I guess you could kind of verify the time. It just makes it hard to verify.
Yeah, I think part of his other problem is that the video, I believe, if I'm correct, it was cropped, and so you couldn't see some of the settings, and just there was a lack of transparency in that. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the post about Norm Glasser and that great photo of a? Did you guys see this? This was from Bigfoot Evidence blog.
On
the 17th. Yeah, this guy posted a picture of a extreme close up of a Bigfoot face, and told everyone that it was a Bigfoot.
Good bust on that one.
Yeah, that's great. Turns out it was not. It was a Bigfoot mask, some sort of fake thing from a little place in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you're gonna hoax, you gotta do a better job than that. I mean, that's
you can see that the eye, it's the right, its left eye is lower. The mass, it matches it pretty well that it's this thing in Chattanooga. I'm looking at it right now on the page. Well, what happens was he says he had a cam tracker out there, right? And this thing was, and you see this close up of this obviously human like slash Sasquatchy looking face, and then whoever did the investigation found this mask.
Oh yeah,
which really matches it really closely.
Oh yeah, total fake, total hoax. Done.
Good job.
All right.
So has anyone added up how many hoaxes we've had this year?
Oh,
28.
No.
Same amount of foxes it takes it to bring down a horse.
We should keep a little tracker somewhere.
We should.
For 2014, that should be our thing.
How many photos? How many?
Hoax tracker 2014.
The hoax tote board.
Because in fairness, the last couple of years with the likes of Matilda and this thing, there's been a few.
Oh, Matilda's not a hoax. It's clearly a Bigfoot.
What are you kidding?
She's narcoleptic, but that's clearly a Bigfoot there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there have been quite a few. Okay, and then where would you, going back to our story of the year, where would you place Melba? Is she a hoax or is she just delusion?
When Danny Perez said that he was publishing his Bigfooter of the year, my suggestion was Melba.
Yeah, like Man of the Year, Time Magazine.
Right.
I was a bit, for precisely that reason. Got more press coverage than anybody else. I think Brian Sykes was a poor second.
A bust, yeah.
Maybe next year, be different. But Melba certainly got the media attention this year.
I think it's a mix, dude. I think she strikes me as a very desperate person and who I think genuinely believes some of her stuff, but then she fudges the material in desperation. I mean, I would bet if you look, one guess would be that I bet her financial situation is probably really nasty. And so she's desperate for something like that and or attention. And so I think folks like that will try to justify their behavior because I know it's true. So what if I'm lying or I don't have the thing here? I know in my heart it's true. That's always the first thing you should look at from anybody who talks about anything when they say, I know in my heart.
Especially when they call themselves a scientist.
Yeah. I think that I go back and forth on this. Today, I think that she's authentically just really bad at what she does and she's not actually hoaxing. But sometimes she opens her mouth and I'm like, oh, she's just playing with us now. She's just completely yanking our chains. All of us, all of our chains are being yanked. we should have brought this up. I'm looking at the show questions. I just posted this yesterday because we pulled the show kind of quickly together. But Matthew White said, we've never discussed it, but the killer donkeys from episode 4.
What
remember, we talked about, because Paul said that there are more people killed by donkeys in the UK than by accidents with blow dryers in the bathroom or something like that.
We discussed it on the following show.
Well, he says,
I corrected me.
Would the killer donkeys be powerful enough to take down a Sasquatch? This kind of gets to the whole fox thing. How many killer donkeys does it take to take down a Sasquatch?
One, if the blow is strategically placed either to its nutsack or its head. it depends how tall the Sasquatch is. How tall? Well, for example, I think the perfect scenario would be this: you have a Sasquatch going down a small gully, right? And you have one of the killer donkeys ass facing the gully up on the ridge of somewhat disguised. Sasquatch whistling, smoking a cigarette, walking along right at the precise moment. Boom! Side of the head.
So you think one?
Whoa, absolutely.
One killer donkey.
Have you ever seen the video of a donkey kicking something? If it hits, even with the titanium possible strength skull a Sasquatch
might have,
I think it'd crush it in.
Like could nothing. Have a titanium skull.
Yeah, of course.
So we're saying distracted, titanium skull-equipped, smoking Sasquatch.
There's the name of the episode, right?
Which one?
This one.
Distracted, titanium skull.
Year-end show.
I think one. I mean, yeah. Harry Houdini was killed by a punch to the stomach.
Yeah, by a midget, if I'm not mistaken. No, I don't know if it was a midget. But I mean, it's hard to get a gang of killer donkeys together. They're pretty independent anyway.
Yes, they are. That's their problem. Again, they do not exhibit teamwork.
No, exactly.
This is why the foxes cannot eat horse, because they don't work together, and the same with these damn killer donkeys.
Unless they're delivering borax in Death Valley.
Well, then they're forced to work together, right?
Exactly. See, but given freedom, fuck it. I don't need.
No,
this
they're
shit.
Just they're free spirits, man.
Exactly.
They're free spirits. That was Matthew White's question. He also wants to know about the robot announcer guy. Well, maybe the robot announcer guy will make a reappearance for this show.
What is the robot announcer guy?
You never listen to the show, so you don't know what he's talking about. But for a while...
I got shit to do. I got donkeys to train.
For a while, I had a little robot voice announcing the show. So we'll see if we can bring that back for this episode.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was great. I'm glad you listened, by the way.
I know.
You're busy. You got lots
of time. I live it. Why I listen?
That's true. That's a good point.
I'll just listen to my voice and go, Jesus, God.
Seth Breedlove. He's in Maroon 5, right, Seth Breedlove?
I believe he's in all of those Bigfoot porn books.
I think he's the bassist in Maroon 5. Anyway, Seth Breedlove. What about the fact that everyone in the field seems to be losing their marbles? Overheard Bindernagel on a podcast.
Losing.
Yeah, well, we've only got a few to begin with. Yeah, overheard Bindernagel on a podcast going on about how he thinks there's something to the whole Bigfoot telepathy thing.
Madness, he says.
Madness!
I think anybody that stays in this field or any other similar field long enough and dedicated enough is going to go mad.
It's like Colonel Kurtz kind of.
That's depressing.
Yeah.
I don't think.
It does.
You're either going to get mad or get depressed.
Well, here's a guy who never, I mean, John Green never went crazy. But he could be depressed. I don't know him. But, you know,
he's been training killer foxes for the last 15 years.
Is he training the foxes? Does he have like little agility training for the foxes? Well, he doesn't seem to have gone nuts. So it's possible to, you know, get around the icebergs of madness that.
Ooh, good title.
Yeah, icebergs of madness. That's a good one. I'll put that one on the list too.
Yeah.
I'm running that down.
Well, you know, back to Seth's question, it's specifically what do you mean by the term telepathy? If you're going to tell me you believe if I'm imagining a three of hearts and a Bigfoot would know I'm thinking of three, yeah, that's crazy.
Bigfoot's I see a diamond.
And he's saying it in English that
we don't know what Bindernagel said because this is all secondhand. But,
yeah. But John's always been a little, you know, John is, I've met him a few times and. You know, he's a little speculative at times. I think he's a good guy, but I wouldn't call him this diehard, rigidly scientific dude. I mean, he, in my opinion, he's a little too open-minded about certain things or certain claims. He's got a lot of little hidden assumptions.
Well, we know how you feel about open minds.
Well, no, I love open minds, but even look at his book. I mean, he decided in his book, we're just going to go with the assumption these things are real. Okay, here's how they act. Oh, really? How scientific? You know, I mean, put it as speculation because that's what it is. It's pure speculation. There's no carcass. There's no discernible footage that can concretely be said. This is behavior of Sasquatches, with the possible exception of the Patterson film, which is probably a hoax. Anyway.
Entirely true. To Paul's point, though.
Didn't John claim to have a sighting 2 years ago?
I'm under the impression that he may have had one recently, but it's sort of on the down low or something. I have no idea. Well, he also
I'm not talking about.
I believe he was, and I could be wrong about this because this is all secondhand. I don't know anything for a fact. He may have been shown the Matilda footage early on, and
convince him,
and not disliked it. But I don't know that for a fact. I think you're right though, Paul, and I think that over time it has. I mean, look at Eric Beckyard. Eric Beckyard is like the classic example of someone who seemed at one point to be reasonable and just went completely around the bend. And I think that there's a combination of a frustrating madness in how tantalizingly close this thing seems all the time, right? But it's always just out of reach. And it's for some people, they're just a little too mentally flexible and they allow themselves to come up with all these reasons. Well, they disappear into another dimension. They turn into rabbits. They can read your mind, you know, all these things. That's why I've never been able to find one or see one or whatever.
I think with
and if you can go, I mean, if he can go down that avenue, then everything makes perfect sense. You can shape everything
exactly.
to make sense.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
You know what? With Beckyard specifically, having met him a couple times, I think it was more than just the field that led him to be great. I think he was genuinely in my opinion, paranoid, schizophrenic, genuinely delusional. and yet could shift into modes where he seemed reasonable. But I mean, if you just looked at the volume of stuff, I mean, when I showed Journey Towards Squatchdom, during the middle of the thing, he comes up to me while it's goes, "This is bullshit." He's like yelling at her. I mean, he's like totally losing it, not missing that it's humorously oriented. He was kicked out. I mean, right. He's yelling at me during the taping. And then he confronted me in the parking lot the next day. You understand that the blah, blah. And then I talked to him I met him years before that with a Southern California researcher named Rich Grumley. And he brought out photos of literally three not even remotely discernible blobs. I mean, there's not even a hint of a possible arm or a head. And he's pointing at them going, well, NASA has shown that this is a mother Bigfoot. And he's totally serious.
Yeah.
So – There was something either organically, whatever, psychologically,
but
he was messed up.
It could be that there's just a significantly higher number of crazy people in the world than we might suspect. Because I've been at conferences where otherwise normal looking people, you know, the kind of people you'd see on, like, you know, the school board or whatever, right? You know, part of the PTO, PTA would walk up. I remember one in particular. This woman brought an entire album of tree photos up to Alton Higgins, and all of them had Bigfoot in them, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe Alton even pulled out like a loop to try to see them. Saw nothing, but she was convinced that there was Bigfoot in every single one of these photos.
Yeah,
she's absolutely convinced. So I think part of the problem is Seth Breedlove. I love your last. I love your last album, by the way,
ladies and gentlemen. Seth Breedlove.
I think that the problem is that this field attracts crazy people, and you have to sort them out of the way even before you do anything else, because we've got nutsoids all around us.
Why can't they be perfect like all of us?
Seriously.
All three of us, and Sam. I mean, we are obviously imperfected beings.
Sam is clearly the most reasonable of all of us.
Obviously. I mean, look at his recent profile picture on Facebook.
Yes.
He looks like a friggin' mortician. What is that about? I'm
kidding. You kid because you love. So
I totally love him. I'm totally joking. Friend him. He's a good guy. Anyway.
Or you know, invite him to play Candy Crush, because I hear he loves.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
he's a big Candy Crush player.
Oh, he's gonna hate you.
Aubrey Ryan, sorry, Aubrey, you have a weird name. I can't pronounce the end of it there. I just want to know, give you a shout out from up here in Canada. Have any of you ever made it up to BC's mid coast? Any Canadians? No, I've never been to Canada's mid coast. I have no Canadian Sasquatch experience. I would love to go to British Columbia.
Yeah.
I just love to go there.
I've been up there. It's crazy easy to imagine a higher primate population of something remaining hidden in there. I mean, even more than Northern California, obviously. Well, you get more rainfall up there, and there's been less development up there. But it's just, again, I've said this several times on the show, when you go to these areas and you know the history of higher primate behavior and the amount of time it took to discover them, and then you go to fucking British Columbia, which I think when you're talking square mileage, is it just kicks the shit out of Africa as far as density and steepness.
There's so much food there.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. And you would probably, like Krantz says, if these things are real, their populations would be small by virtue of their relative size to other life forms up there. I mean, if Sasquatches exist, they could remain – and if they were only in British Columbia, let's say, this mystery could go on for hundreds of years, in my opinion.
Yeah. So. Would love to go up there.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Well, Aubrey, if you've got a spare bedroom, just let us know, because we could make a road trip out of it.
Yeah. Speaking of which.
Oh, well, no, that's the end of the show. That's at the end.
Can we tease it? Oh,
no, I've got to give you guys a list of segue opportunities next time.
Oh, okay.
But that would require any kind of pre-work that goes into the show, which there is practically none. Chad Doris wants to know, is Bigfoot a guest you would bring to the Christmas party or New Year's party? He also wants to know the craziest Melba quote. I think you just go to our Facebook page and read every single one of them.
Yeah.
But with regard to bringing Bigfoot, no, you can't bring Bigfoot. First of all, he smells.
Yeah.
Right? He's probably gonna scoop the onion dip out with his hand.
True.
Which is just disgusting. No, you can't bring someone like that.
He'll be pissing on the tree, the punch.
He's going to be complaining about the food, saying he's vegetarian.
He's going to hide behind the tree.
Hitting on your girlfriend.
He's going to want to know where the deer livers are, because that's all he eats.
That'd be great. Big plate of deer livers.
We heard you were bringing your friend, so.
That's another big old plate of deer livers. Year-end show.
So there you go. There you go, Chad. Gary Ingram says, if the North American Wood Ape Society, he's got the name wrong, but it's the, you know, NAWAC, achieves their goal in 2014, how would the press release from Moneymaker and Ketchum and Scott read? What's your press release, Scott? I think his assumption is somebody in the NAWAC plugs a Bigfoot and that's it. I think
exactly.
That's, I think
one,
that's
one word. Bastards!
That's your press release?
Enjoy hell. Two other words. I also like the way he wrote it as the assumption that maybe all three of us together jointly release.
Well, no, I'm assuming they're separate, not that you jointly release a statement. That would be fascinating, actually.
I'd like a press conference.
I want to be on that conference call between you, Moneymaker, and Ketchum. Lord.
I would just sit there and I don't know what I would do. It would just be wow.
Yeah. I think Moneymaker would use it as an opportunity to say that everything he's been saying for all these years has been absolutely right. I mean, he's been vindicated, and how horrible it was that we had to kill one because we knew all these things already anyway.
And Ketchum would say something similar, I think.
Oh, yeah, probably. And then she'd also be calling for blood and murder charges and all kinds
of
things.
And I would agree with her on that point.
Murder charges.
And then I would also say, I completely agree, Melvin, but man, you are a terrible scientist. And that would be it. And I'd cut one and leave.
Okay.
All right.
You'd cut one and leave. That's, how else?
Stay classy, Porter Ranch.
Have you, anybody here read this book, Abominable Science? I haven't read it. I don't know.
I have a copy of it, and I started reading it, but I've not got very far.
What do you think of the first 12 pages or whatever you've read?
They're wonderful paper with writing on.
Lovely, supple vellum.
It's a nice book. No, so far it seems quite good. But I've just got to find time to read it.
Well, you don't have time to read the things we post to our Facebook page.
What I need is an audiobook version of it with Scott doing his Ruth Westheimer voice.
Which
is it on the Audible?
Do you know what? I've got no idea. I wouldn't have thought.
Forward.
So.
This is a bunch of bullshit.
Are you checking?
Yeah.
All right. I won't check then. You can check. That would be I'd listen to it that way, sure. I have a hard time reading books as well. Book notes not there.
No.
All right. Sorry. That was Zach Moore. Zach Moore, by the way. Sorry, I know everyone loves to hear their names read on the super exclusive podcast. Zach Moore. He says it's good though. He said it's good stuff so far. So maybe you want to check it out.
Yeah.
If you're listening,
is that the one with the big ape on the?
The big screaming ape. I know that Sharon Hill thought highly of it, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
Can't go a show without mentioning Sharon Hill now for some reason.
Of course,
reason.
Yeah. You and her little thing got going on there?
Well, I follow her on the Twitter, so I see her a lot. I see her on the Twitter. I see her on the Facebook, so it's like I'm always being subjected to what she thinks.
Yeah. Well, she's a professional skeptic now, so she's...
She has a lot of technical...
You've got to be making some money, and I think Sharon would be the first person to say...
She's not making much. No.
She's not making any money.
She had a lot of technical problems. That's all I know. She has a lot of technical problems.
Maybe she could promote herself as less annoying than Benjamin Radford. I love you, Ben. Come on, man.
Less annoying alternative. Yeah. Let's see. If money... And this is Justin Horn... if money and manpower were in infinite supply, this is how you get chimps glued onto tigers. But anyway, if money and manpower were in infinite supply, what strategy/tactics would each of you deploy to prove the existence of Bigfoot and to study them? So you've got two very high hurdles: prove the existence of Bigfoot, not collect evidence, but definitively establish it. And then to study them.
All right. We could do a whole show on this.
Okay, yeah, you can go first. Go ahead.
If infinite money and time, and time is an important
now,
part of this.
I'm going to preface this. You cannot make up technology that does not exist.
Sure. Yeah. Right, okay. Right. Okay. I would.
Yes.
Infinite money. It would be a group handpicked. Of course, Brian, unless he swore under oath, he wasn't packing any kind of weaponry with him, like a grenade or anything like that.
Are you trying to deny me my Second Amendment rights? Is that what you're doing? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is getting the Duck Dynasty. It's not a First Amendment. It's not a Second Amendment issue. He was a employee, and I fired him. Anyway, I think I would like to, again, getting, you know, you handpick people, researchers, people who've worked with higher primates, and work on an habituation scenario, and utilizing known existing tracking technology along with anesthetizing stuff, which would involve taking a risk of yourself and also with the animal to be able to get to the point where you would put a tracking, let's say probably best thing, ankle titanium type thing on it, let it go, track it. And again, this information stays completely within the group. It's not publicized because it would be a multi-year thing. You let it live its life. You get closer to it again. You get video. You get all that. When it dies naturally, you then submit the body to science at large and all the data collected there to it. And in the meantime, during that, let's say you got to point four where you actually got a tracking device on one. So you're able to get hair samples and blood samples with the initial anesthetizing. You'd have some scientists, oh, we have to have a body. You don't. I mean, as far as, look, if you request a body, you're going to get it when it's done living, since there is no hard evidence to suggest that they're endangered. But you would give some of it. Some would cry it's a hoax. But then how would you hoax hair and blood that is clearly higher primate, but the DNA shows it's something new? It would drive some people crazy. But I don't know if you know this or not, Brian, but I'm anti-kill.
Are you?
Yeah.
So you would not be in favor of killing one.
I would not. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right, that's good. So I'm going to make a note of that.
That would be my ideal scenario. And if during this time where you would hopefully, because it's really hard to learn any behavior from a dead Sasquatch, is to, if during that time technology developed where it would get more easier to do the tracking, then you would use it. But if given the parameters, that's ideally what I would like to do.
Paul.
Well, we discussed this on a very early show. I'm still going to – well, I have two ideas now.
I think it was the same show that gave us the tigers with the chimps. I think that was the same show.
My original plan was cage in the woods full of gibbons or something.
That's interesting.
That's not fair to the gibbons.
And I don't care.
Well, you heartless, cartless person.
Yep.
I'm not going to – and a Bigfoot trap, so it'll come to visit the gibbons. But since then, because with all the really good research that's been going on in the last few years, particularly with the help of the BFRO, I thought perhaps.
You know what makes that? I have to put a small pause. That what you just said, the reason it was funny is because of your British accent. That's what made it funny. Go ahead.
Perhaps I could open a branch in the woods of International House of Pancakes. Make all the staff wear Chewbacca costumes and leave a visitor's book at the entrance.
Yes.
And so sooner or later, you're going to have proof positive because he would have written his name in the visitor's book. Later,
right. Or you could collect DNA from his utensils when he was then eating.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But I think you just need an IHOP in every forest.
Yeah, I think.
Because we know.
I like that.
I mean, we know. Bigfoot research. You should have an IHOP in every forest.
We know from BFRO that they do eat pancakes.
Well, and here's the thing. I think you're onto something, because if you could get him to eat at the IHOP on a regular basis, he will develop diabetes and without treatment die in the woods, and then you'd have your carcass there as well.
Yep.
Because everything, if I don't know if you've been to an IHOP lately, but if it isn't covered in sugary, you know, syrupy kind of crap, then they don't sell it. That's pretty much it's a 2,000 calorie meal with
even the eggs. It's really disgusting.
Everything, right? So I really think that's a good idea, Paul. I think you're onto something.
Well, of course, since the last time I went to an IHOP, I did develop diabetes.
You do not want to go. Stay away.
Damn it.
Stay away.
But of course, do they still give the kids little badges and things? You could put little trackers on them, so when he does sit down for a meal, he could put a
badge
on
the badge now, it counts down. Basically, the badge reflects how many days of your life you lost by eating.
I thought you said badgers. That would be more interesting.
Badgers would be.
Badgers.
Here's your badger.
So yeah, I mean, I think the IHOP plan would be a good one. I think that would work.
Cool.
I think that clearly the study part is just bodies where you can feel pretty confident they are, and you know, people who have an understanding in the background and all that sort of thing.
Well, not really. I'm just going to send the visitor's book off for a handwriting.
No, I'm not talking about your... I'm talking about... this is my answer. This is my answer now. This is... Say, you already did your answer.
Remember, infinite money.
Infinite money. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You've got like a dozen...
You buy an island and forget Bigfoot. Get the hell out of here.
Right. If I had infinite money, I'd tell you I was looking for Bigfoot and I'd buy a Greek island and hang out with, you know, swimsuit models or something. But... because you have infinite money, you could just fake,
yeah, I know,
just fake stuff, right? And
you could yeah exactly.
No, if I had infinite money, I'd put a team of experienced primatologists out there to do their thing. And this is essentially after you've proven it, though. And I think, you know, the way that we prove it, we've already talked about, and I think there's nothing new I would do there. I would just put people in the field all the time until they got the job done, and then that would be it. Sorry.
You can't even say you want to kill one. You can't even say it.
Well, I don't want to kill one. I just think that's how it's going to happen. I don't want to kill anything.
Well, yes, you do.
I don't like eating meat where I can still see the structure of the animal's body. I think that's – but, you know, yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
I think we should all form this group. This should be – and we just – we have the patience, and we can also make films of this. We can actually – you know, the whole thing, and then – then they'll, you know, like the guy with Grizzly Man, we'll get too close and it'll slaughter us. But at least
awesome.
We didn't kill it.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah. Okay, so let's see here. There you go, Justin. Or Jason, whatever your name is.
That, you know, that's always a good question. We've answered that question in many ways over the years, but it is a really...
No,
great
it is.
Question, I think. It's
And the point is that there's practically, essentially no money being spent on it right now. And hardly any, statistically speaking, hardly anything is happening that's in anything like wildlife biology going on at this
point. Unless there is some secret. Seriously, if there were some.
Oh, I would love to know about it.
People with money. But I can understand. I mean, again, the scenario I put forth, I could totally understand you would want to keep it secret.
I can think of two groups that I think are seriously doing it, and they're expending significant percentages of their resources, time and money. It's the Texas group that I'm a part of, the NAWAC, and also the guys in the Olympic Peninsula.
Those are the two
that I'm aware of. There may be others that just aren't as public about it.
But here's the problem. If you do have an organization, and I'm not going to mention any particular organizations by name, and you do get a financial backer, let's just call him Wally, perhaps.
Wally. Like I wanted to bring up Wally. Go ahead.
What do you do? Do you say, do you know what? Your money's great. We've got this long-term plan.
Yeah.
We are going to go and live in the forest for months and months and months and months on end, and we're going to eat berries, and we're going to smell like forest creatures, and we're going to do this serious sort of proper wildlife biology work. Or give us the same money, and we'll get you a quick fix and show you some videos of pancake-eating Bigfoot. Mm. What are you going to do?
Well,
there are some groups, but there are that would do it. But there are other groups that would take the. Let's just take the money.
Well, are you insinuating something, Paul?
I think he is. I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. Well, yeah, you know what? Well, that could explain someone we were talking about earlier in the show. Perhaps their motivation is, especially if you're in a situation and you. And maybe this is somewhat applicable to Melba as well, is, well, you know, oh, we need more funding. Well, you got to deliver something type of thing. And again, that's a temptation, I think, that rears its ugly head in front of people.
But doesn't that happen? I'm not saying that the people who bring out images of Bigfoot eating pancakes are the same as, you know, genuine scientists, but this sort of, you know, pressure to deliver results that happens in honest regular science as well, not just in this kind of crap.
No, of course it does. Right, of course it does.
But the trouble, I was just going to say, it usually affects the objectivity of what's going on. It's like, you know, like a cop. We need to find the killer. And how many times is history shown when people are, you know, they get a guy and turns out later it wasn't this person, which is. What they were going for was the truth, and they didn't, because they were blinded by either greed or fear of losing the money or whatever. So I think obviously if it was a privately financed thing where there was enough, where you didn't have the external pressure to please anybody else, you would be in a better mindset, I think, to well, in, not just in Bigfoot, but in anything to accomplish your goal.
Yeah.
I'm Wayne Dyer with looking to the source.
You're what?
Wayne Dyer. He's a motivational speaker.
Oh, sorry. I didn't.
Thought I was getting a little preachy.
Didn't catch your reference there.
Sorry, no.
Yeah, I think that the money thing, I think it, if not done well, it you know, it's corrupting, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you also need it. So it's one of these things where it's like, if you don't have it, you're severely limited in what you can do. But if you do have it, then, you know, to Paul's point, you might end up doing stuff just to keep the money train going.
Like a TV.
You know, well, I don't know if this would be applicable to this, but it's almost like, you know, something, and again, I want to thank Brian for initially turning me onto this, but the whole Kickstarter scenario where it's such a great model because you're basically, if you've got a goal on something artistic or if it was applicable to something scientific, you're asking people who already know what you do. And you're the boss going in and you're asking, hey, want to help out? You'll get this in return at the end. And that's in doing with the films I do. It's so wonderful because I'm not beholden. All these people helped me,
right?
Including yourself, Brian, is they trusted me to do that. And, and so I don't feel that, I got to keep it, whatever. I mean, you hopefully have the pressure to do good work, to make a good film, but not like, the boss is looking over your shoulder type of thing.
Yeah.
It's, maybe source.
I wonder if anybody's done, like a Kickstarter Indiegogo project to fund their endeavor. I don't know that I've ever heard of anyone doing that. I know that Bill Munn's tried to do it on Indiegogo to do some kind of documentary or something.
Right.
But he didn't make any money.
Yeah, but it works best if you've got, you know, if you've got a track record of providing a tangible product.
Right, exactly.
I don't think Scott's Kickstarter projects would have worked anywhere near as well if he didn't have a track record of Journey to Scotchdom and the walking DVDs.
Yeah.
That
is a prerequisite for, I'm in all seriousness, for these kind of projects to work, and we're kind of segueing into our last topic. But for these things, you have to demonstrate that you can do.
Yeah,
because people have learned. I mean, I myself have backed Kickstarter projects for people who just had a great idea, and almost all of them have been complete disasters. You know, like
except mine, of course.
Well, no, because you could prove that you could accomplish what you were setting out to do. But right. I backed a guy who had a great idea for a dock for an iPhone that plugged into a wall socket, had a speaker built in. It was a great idea, and he's still working on it. It's been like 2 years.
Yeah,
it's never going to see the light.
Wasn't one of the first ones you did some shoes or?
Oh yeah, my sandal. It took 2.5 years to get these sandals from people who made sandals. So that's a bad example. But no Kickstarter. I have a really hard time now backing physical products on Kickstarter.
Yeah,
which I probably shouldn't
say. Watch this. Turns up, it's shit.
Yeah, and it's so far behind.
It is so far behind. The
that being said, we would like to draw your attention to a Kickstarter project. So, who was it that asked this question? This will be our segue, and this will be how we end the show. But blah blah blah. Oh, Gary Ingram, percentage chance that while recording the Bigfoot Show documentary Road Trip, which is not the official name. You accidentally/on purpose acquire a specimen while either Paul is operating the rental vehicle on the wrong side of the road or...
Hang on. I'm going to stop you there, Brian.
Yes?
It's the correct side of the road.
No, it's not. Or Scott accidentally, quote unquote, discharges a firearm, quote unquote, seemingly harmlessly into the bushes.
Oh, the irony.
Yes, that would be funny. Like, you just let me see your gun, and bam, and like a dead Bigfoot falls out of a tree. That would be hilarious.
That would be so. No, seriously. You know what? Seriously,
I think. I think the chances of Paul hitting one accidentally exist. They're very low. The chances of Scott shooting one accidentally are infinitesimally small, practically zero. Because I would never hand him a firearm.
No. I wouldn't hide myself a firearm.
No. So he's never. That's never going to happen. Accidentally discharging a firearm.
Well, we're not going to
presupposes
have a firearm on the trip anyway, are we? Except the bazooka. We decided on that.
Well, they mounted that to the hood of the truck, but everything else.
That's awesome. Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be. Just see one. And you have your finger on that red button with a little flip up cover.
And we do alternating shots. It shows you like putting a missile in it, and then when you're not looking, I put feathers in it. You know.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we've talked about doing this video thing. And at one point, I don't remember how much of this said we, how much we said off the show and how much we said on the show. But we were kind of looking for an early summer start. That's not going to happen. So now we're talking about a late summer kind of thing. We still don't have specifics. But if we're, if it's going to happen, we're going to have to raise money. And we're going to have to raise money from the people who listen to the show.
Right.
Because there's going to be expenses. There's going to be hardware we're going to have to get. And some of this stuff we already have amongst us. Some of it, you know, we'd probably feel more comfortable buying ourselves. But we're going to need to pick up some hardware. We're going to need to fly people around. We're going to need to, you know, do it. And then, of course, we have to actually produce the thing. So it's not unlike the things that you do, Scott. If somebody is paying money for you to do one of your, you know, walking things, there's getting there to do the walking. And then there's also the time it takes you to edit and compile and create the finished product. I mean, those things are two separate chunks of expense.
Yeah.
And haven't we got to raise $300,000 to build a balloon with cameras on?
Well... Well, yeah, $300,000 plus the amount of money it takes to fly you from England. So
we need a blimp. We need a Bigfoot blimp with thermal cameras.
Yeah. All four of us need to ride in this thing. So, you know, it can't be insubstantial.
But it's not going to be. Well, I don't think you were going to probably get into any specific numbers, were you, Brian?
We would have to raise money. What I'm curious to hear from people who listen to the show, and you could tell us on Facebook, and you know, because I'm going to post the link to this show when it's done. But like, would you? And if you would, like, how much would you donate? I mean, we're just trying to figure out, like, there's actually a little bit of work involved in actually setting up a Kickstarter campaign. And so before we even do it, what I'd hate to do is like go to all that effort and then raise, you know, $150. That would be sad.
And of course, and again, those who aren't familiar with the Kickstarter format, it's not like you're just donating and that's all there is. You actually would get, you would obviously get a cut either, probably downloads, autographed DVD of the finished product. We'd probably throw some others, you know, mentions on the website, mentions on the show.
You know what we could do?
Producer credit also as well.
The bottle you urinate in while we're on the road, we could end up, that could be a premium. Dude. A premium.
That could be in the $500.
That could be.
Yeah. but that's a great idea, actually. It could be things that we actually accumulate. And this isn't going to be a super – I think we've talked in the realm of probably a 10 to 14-day road trip starting from Central California probably flying into San Francisco, then so going up through classic Northwestern California. Along the coast, and probably get up into Canada a little bit, for at least near the end. So, you know,
depending on all of that is in the scope, right? So from basically San Francisco north to BC, who knows how far we can get or what we would do. But yeah, all of that is sort of like in the ballpark for what we're talking about.
I would say also, I think we're open to the idea, anybody who would people, and it could be you yourself, listener, somewhere along the line. John Q, listener, you too could be involved. We might interview you. If you've got a good story, let us know immediately.
It's a bunch of bullshit is what it is.
Anyway, let us throw out ideas about people that would maybe be cool, people who've had sightings or that you think, and we don't want, you know, Joe Blow, hey, I got to make a sighting. I want to get in the film. You know, areas where there have been really cool sightings, something that we could realistically within a 10 to 14 day thing where we're not going to be killing ourselves. You know, I mean, it's going to be intense, but we have enough time to shoot so that we can get we're probably going to need about 30, 35 hours of footage an hour and a half film.
We're going to deliver this on 20 DVDs, right?
What?
20 It's a 20 volume. Because we want you want at the $2,000 level, you will get all the raw, unedited footage in your Dropbox. No, I'm kidding. To be clear, though, we're not talking about doing a Finding Bigfoot looking for Bigfoot thing, are we?
We're not going to find it. So
no, we won't.
Oh, ye of little faith. I think. Well, we had talked about this off the show too. I would think at least two, maybe three nights we're out in the woods somewhere. Sure. Like I'd like, for example, part of this, I'd like to take these guys up the hill after a full cavity search of all of them for weaponry. Sure. so many things wrong with it.
So many things.
And because this is right off 101 up near the mouth of the Klamath River, things like that, stopping in again at Trees of Mystery, stopping in at Legend of Bigfoot, meeting people who over the years have been involved in the Bigfoot phenomena as researchers, crackpots, the whole gamut of squatchery that we just have this road trip and we film. And we're kind of envisioning all of us having a camera and taping, and then I, you know, hibernating and editing it together once we're done.
Hilarity will ensue.
Hopefully.
Clearly. I mean, there's no way this isn't absolute comedy gold. Except that it might not be.
Except for the possibility that it might not
be. That it might just suck. Right?
Yeah. Now, I think the potential is there for it to be a really good film. And as a film equivalent of one of our podcasts.
It kind of feels to me sort of like an extension, possibly sort of a team effort of the kind of things you've done about Bigfoot in the past, the squatching and the journey towards squatching.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of a feel, I think, is absolutely fair. So if you're familiar with that, that's kind of what we'd be looking for.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Squatching, it is
you
available.
Should. It's available at squatchfilms.com, right?
As well as Amazon, Brian.
Amazon.com as well. If you've got an Amazon gift card for Christmas, there really is no better use for that gift card than to go to Amazon and purchase
Squatching.
The combo DVD. Now it's on. They're both on one.
On
package,
one DVD, right? Squatching and Journey Towards Squatching.
And how much is that?
$20.
If anybody goes to buy it on Amazon and Amazon website tells them people who bought Journey to Squatchdom also bought Come for Bigfoot. Please don't be surprised.
Did I ever share with you? This is one of the best. This is almost too bad to even say on the show. So if you are easily offended and or an overly religious person, please forgive me, and you might want to turn it off right now. But one of the best people also bought on Amazon. There was the crackers you get when you go to church, and if you're Catholic,
the communion wafers,
like, you know, a big box of communion wafers. People who bought this also bought, and down below it was KY jelly. I'm not lying to you; it was true. It's true. It was horrible.
There goes our 15 devout Catholic listeners.
I'm sorry. It was the algorithm. It wasn't me. I'm just reporting what I saw.
It was the algorithm.
All right. It was. In fact, I wonder if it's still like that. Anyway, so there you go. That's our. We're talking about it in front of you all. I mean, we don't have a firm plan, but if we do it, it would be late summer.
Yeah. And we'd probably put a Kickstarter thing out probably sometime in.
We'd kind of have to do it.
Well, here's the thing. We have to firm up because of our relative schedules. I mean, I will probably also be doing another project next year, so I've got to know when that is going to be, so I have a lot of time for doing this. You know, Paul, Brian, and Sam are all married with kids. Paul's in Britain, so we have to get –
Is he?
Yeah. Yeah, he is. It's not Britain, Georgia. Yeah. It's Britain. It's the Great Britain.
Wow. The great one.
So they say.
As opposed to the lesser one.
Yeah.
Is just the regular Britain versus the
Great
Britain?
No, Great Britain is called Great Britain to distinguish it from Lesser Britain.
Where's Brittany? You're making this shit up now.
No, Brittany.
Brittany.
In France.
Brittany Spears?
No, Brittany in France was known as Lesser Britain.
All right.
Great Britain is called Great Britain to distinguish it from Lesser Brittany.
Wow. So you guys have basically been snobby for a really long time.
Oh,
is that
forever.
What you're
They're very good at it.
I'm fairly sure they invented it. Well, that's not true. I think the French invented it and the British, they perfected it.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's – I'm not a history
guy. All right.
The French snobbishness is, of course, the reason why you guys drive on the wrong side of the road.
Really? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The French aristocrats insisted that the peasants walked on the other side of the road and gave way to them.
Wow.
Up until then, the French – drove on the left.
I defy you to explain in any logical way that driving on the left side of the road makes more sense than driving on the right side of the road.
Because it's been done for longer.
Whatever.
The Romans did it.
Maybe there's a hemispherical way.
Wouldn't
it make sense? Maybe the Coriolis effect?
Like how the water sways.
Yeah, in the toilet. Yeah. Yeah.
There are two very good reasons. The first is that when you're riding a horse, your sword is available to your right hand, not your left. So when you're passing somebody coming the other way, you're facing them sword to sword.
Well, you guys aren't allowed to.
You know what I mean.
The other reason, and this is absolutely true, is that countries like the United States and much of Europe that drives on the right, you have more fatal car accidents as the result of heart attacks at the wheel than countries that drive on the left. And the reason is that when you have a heart attack at the wheel, your left arm tends to pull down. We just drive off the side of the road. You drive into the central reservation and hit the oncoming traffic.
Wow.
Just as what was his name? The wrestler last year. Macho Man, Randy Savage.
Oh, is that how he died?
That's exactly how he died.
No, I have no idea.
Had a heart attack, hit oncoming traffic.
This is how small a world this is. I'm not kidding. My dad, this morning or yesterday, was talking about that same topic, about the thing, why we drive to the side and the heart attack and going to the left. I am not joking. What are the odds of that?
Pretty slim. Huh?
Pretty slim. And you say there's not a Bigfoot, Joe Scoffdick.
And on that bombshell, we're done. This show's over. It's been over for half an hour. Yep. That's why it's like one of those animals that gets hit by a car and it just twitches on the side. This is what this show has been. It's just twitching.
We're just waiting for something to come and take the liver.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's no one in charge, so.
End scene. One, two, three.
Don't forget, groove is in the heart, and Delight has definitely been known to smoke. On stage, that is.
De-grooving!